Violet Brown driving.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Game on lock for sure.
Whew, the Hawks made this a rough night. Second free throw. Bounces out. Herter does not get the three-quarters court shot away, and that will do it. Not a lot pretty about this one, except the result. The Celtics begin the new year by escaping the Atlanta Hawks. The final score, Boston 109, Atlanta 106.
Me and Trey Young got into something, and he came out of nowhere and just grabbed me. And I just told him, like, you know, don't grab. Like, watch out. This ain't nothing to do with you. Like, you know, just don't grab me. So that was it. I pushed him off me, and we walked away.
All right, that was closer than it should have been last night against one of the worst and least healthy teams in the NBA. Celtics win over the Atlanta Hawks at home, 109-106. That was Marcus Smart, who was excellent last night. Hits a big three late and then gets into it. What he was talking about there was a bit of a scuffle that he got into at the end of the game with Trae Young, which, as much as I love like all the Marcus Smart stuff, you're never going to hear me be Adam Jones on Marcus Smart. I think it's one of his guys. He has a bone to pick with, like Jackie Bradley Jr. I'm with him on that. But with Marcus Smart, I love all the intangible things. I love all the Marcus Smart stuff. When it crosses a line, though, or when he plays up when he's trying to play up a foul, and it's, you know, he's like grabbing the eye or going down, or like when he's overplaying that kind of stuff, that's what gets to be too much. And what happened at the end of that game last night was also too much. I'm not going to be surprised, Chris, if the league ends up looking at that. They probably should.
You think so?
I think so. Like, it's just, it's that extracurricular activities. It's like, I have no, it's just stupid, fake, tough guy stuff. And that's when Marcus Smart kind of bugs me. But overall, I feel like we literally haven't talked about you and I, this team, in like more than a month.
I know. It's been so long.
And a lot has transpired. I think for me now, they've defied expectations. I've said it a million times here going into this season. I thought that there would be a more enjoyable product. I thought at the very least they were going to give you a bang for your buck on a random Wednesday in January. Like, that's what I expected out of the Celtics this year. Now, with the way that they've played, especially in that Christmas Day game where they went up to Toronto and waxed them, and I know that was a home and home, they lost the following game, but, I mean, Toronto was never in that game, and how they've looked, the season you're getting from Jaylen Brown. True. But no, you know, the way that Jaylen Brown has elevated his game, I think you can make a case they're maybe the third or fourth best team in the league right now. I'm not kidding. Like, they probably are going to go on a deep run. That's how I feel about the Celtics now. They're going to win the championship? Probably not, but they're defying expectations for me since the last time you and I got to talk about this team.
No, I mean, I would agree. I mean, obviously, you know, they've won 7 of 8 here. That was a slog against the Hawks, but they pulled out at the end. Some great defensive plays, I thought, from Daniel Tice, and that's really sort of been one of the stories. I mean, the play of Daniel Tice and Enes Kanter, I mean, those are guys, when you look at it, people are saying that's the weak link of the team, but they're playing really, really well. There's no question about it. I still think, though, with the Celtics, for me, as much as I'm enjoying this team and I'm enjoying the emergence of, you know, Jaylen Brown, who's just been incredibly efficient this season offensively, I still think that they're closer to the pack of Miami, Toronto, Indiana than they are to Milwaukee.
Yeah, and then this,
I'll throw Philly in that pack too.
Yeah, and we'll get to them. It's just there's some things to talk about.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of stuff percolating there.
There's some interesting things to talk about with that team. Yeah, I just, the other thing too, that the reason I guess I'm so high on them right now, it just feels like during this really good stretch that they've had, Chris, like there's always something when it comes to injury or illness. Like they can't get the whole team on the floor at the same time. And even last night, Kemba Walker's out with the flu. It just feels like during this stretch, we haven't seen the full team. So once they're full Voltron, I think that, you know, that's where we're really going to see this team and what, you know, what their ability is in terms of, you know, and why I feel so strong on them and actually being able to make a deep run this postseason. The talk still is, though, do they need to add at center? You see the night that Tice has last night.
I mean, 14 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 huge blocks at the end of the game on Trae Young. He blocked the 3 at the end. Also, we had Trae Young had a drive that Tice pinned to the glass. He was really big in that game, you know, the way he was able to play down the street. And that's the thing that's been most impressive to me about the Celtics is the way they performed defensively. You know, like Jason Tatum has one of the best defensive ratings. He's a top 10 defensive rating guy in the league. I think their team defense has been very, very good, and that's sort of what you're hanging your hat on. Obviously, offensively, they have guys who can create their own shot. They'll move the basketball, but the way that they play defensively, and I thought they really won that game, you know, defensively last night with the way they were able to close it out, defending Atlanta, not allowing Trae Young to get open looks, the block shots, their ability to force turnovers. You know, I thought all of that stuff really sort of played into that win. And that, to me, is like a really good sign for them, because I felt like that defensive identity was something they lost at times last year.
So do you think it's imperative that they try to make a move for another center? Because that's been the talk. And now Adrian Wojnarowski, as you might have heard in some of the headlines from McCone, Andre Drummond is being shot by the Detroit Pistons. Detroit and Atlanta have been engaged in talks on a trade on Drummond. There's other teams that are also potentially involved here. One would be the Celtics. Feels like the cost would be high, but if you're one of these people that feels like they still got to do something at the five, would you make the deal for Drummond?
Depends on what I have to give up. I would maybe aim a little lower than that, just in terms of what the cost is going to be. I'm not saying this guy's available, but I've always been like a big Miles Turner guy. I think that he's a guy that I think could fit in more as a role player. He can stretch the floor and shoot threes as a five. I think Drummond's more your traditional five man. He is very good defensively, but in rebounding, he's, you know, best rebounder in the league. But at the same time, you know, offensively, is he willing to sort of just take a complete back seat? I don't know. I don't know how that would work. And it seems like, I mean, some of the stuff I had seen yesterday was Atlanta was considering sending their 2020 first round pick. Now, I'm sure there'd be some protections built in there, but that was one of the things they were going to dangle out for Andre Drummond.
What does that do for them? Like, that's one of those teams right now that is like NBA Siberia. It's not like,
I know it's weird. You know, I think they feel like they like their young core Atlanta a little bit with DeAndre Hunter and Trae Young. We'll see what Reddish can become. But watching that game last night, they desperately need rim protection. They desperately. I mean, you know, Alex Len sucks. There's no other way to put it. He's terrible. And,
well, he was just a guy in Phoenix when he was there.
Yeah, and you know, John Collins is a four who can give you some rim protection. But I watching the Hawks play and watching how easily the Celtics were getting into the lane and watching Marcus Smart post up and back down Trae Young, I was like, this team desperately needs an eraser on the back end. And I think they're sort of trying to establish their culture a little bit, and they can't really do it defensively without an eraser there. So I could see where they'd be interested. And I mean, I don't watch a lot of Hawks games. That was the only one I've seen like all year long. But immediately after watching them for 5 minutes, I'm like, this team needs rim protection. So I'm not surprised they're in on Drummond.
How are you feeling about the Celtics right now there, McCone? I know you've been kind of bullish on them heading into the season. And would you be interested in them trading for Andre Drummond?
I love them. I'm with Chris. I would aim a little lower than Drummond just because the cost, I think, would be substantial. And I'm not sure how well he fits in terms of what you're trying to do with him being a traditional big. The other thing, too, is he's good defensively, but Joel Embiid owns him.
Good
so
point.
I think one of the things going in the postseason is you'd look for someone that could stop him, and if he really doesn't do that for what you're giving up, I'm not sure if it's necessarily worth it.
That's a great point by McCone, because, yeah, isn't that the whole point of getting a big? We need someone who can, you know, combat Joel Embiid, which Cantor's actually done a pretty good job with. I mean, I'm sort of contradicting myself here. I think Drummond's just a little too rich for my taste, but at the same time, I think it would be a mistake for the Celtics to get sort of complacent here and sort of, you know, pull like the old, like, oh, yeah, Jermaine O'Neal looks really good. We don't need another big, and do that with sort of Cantor and Tice. They played really well. They've exceeded expectations, but I wouldn't sit there if I'm Danny Ainge and say, oh, we're good. You know, we should stop pursuing any upgrades at that spot.
And in terms of your perspective, Tim, like, you know, has that changed here in this, the way that this team's played over the last month? Do you feel like, now how I feel like, okay, like you were just looking for a more entertaining season, more bang for your buck, and now feel like, ooh, this team actually might make a run.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be really similar to the Isaiah Thomas Celtics, where you'd get a really good regular season and then come postseason time, they'd get rolled by some team. But ultimately, I think that they're really are one serviceable big away from kind of being in contention in the Eastern Conference. And this whole thing, I mean, outside of the two LA teams, feels like it's pretty wide open. So, I mean, I would go out and make that move. I'm just not sure Drummond's the one.
All right, so who are some other trade targets? Let's go to Steve in Medford, your first up here on the Sports Hub Celtics show today. Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing today?
Good, thanks.
Good. How are you?
Good. So I'm actually not a huge fan of going after Drummond either, because it would probably cost you Gordon Hayward in terms of adding up the contracts that have to be traded. And the more I think about it, I actually don't think we need to make a trade for a center, because I'm fine with Tyson Cantor as a 1-2 punch. I actually think they need help off the bench, because you have guys like Grant Williams and Semi Ojeleye playing 15 minutes a night, and they can't give you any points at all. So would it make more sense to get a guy in Washington like David Bertans, that a shooter, the 6'10 guy who can snipe from threes? You know, you get him, you probably don't have to give up that much, and he can replace those minutes for guys like Semi and Grant. Do you guys think that's an option?
I definitely feel like they need bench scoring. Now, again, I would not fall into the trap there of saying, like, okay, let's not worry about center at all, because I do think that while they're getting strong performance at the center position right now from Cantor and Theis, I think it's a little different in a playoff series versus when you're doing it in the regular season. I think you can get exposed a little bit in a playoff series. But I do agree with him, though. I mean, I put, you know, big man and bench scoring are, like, right there for me. Like, you know, it's hard to choose one you need more than the other. And I still think this team needs more bench scoring, especially if, like, you know, what they're going to do is have the decision be, we're going to put all the wings in the starting lineup together like they did last night. If it's going to be Hayward, Tatum, and Hayward in the starting lineup and no one's willing to go to the bench, then they definitely need to get some sort of veteran bench scorer, someone who can come off the bench and score points. And it would help them to get a little more shooting in there as well off the bench, just somebody who can knock down outside shots.
All right, it's an abbreviated show today as we have the Bruins pregame coming up at 12:30. They're hosting the Edmonton Oilers over at the Garden this afternoon. But coming up, there's some must-hear audio if you haven't heard this yet, because it doesn't sound like Gordon Hayward and the Celtics brass are on the same page when it comes to this foot injury he's been dealing with. So I want to play that for you. Also want to get to Al Horford's unhappiness in Philadelphia. We'll do that along with your phone calls next on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I was curious. You said it's a toe foot injury with Hayward. It's the same leg, you know, and my brain goes back to 2017 with that injury. It's the same leg. I know this is foot, not ankle, not fibula, but is it in any way, shape, or form related to past injuries, i.e. what happened in 2017?
I don't think so. I don't believe so at all, no. It's just right in the bottom of your foot. I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with it.
I think it has everything to do with the prior injury. I mean, I didn't get hurt on my right foot. When you have a traumatic event like that to your foot and your ankle, like, things are going to change inside of there that you don't know necessarily, because they might not bug you, but I think they start to poke their head a little bit if it gets tweaked in some way or another. I think it does have to do with, I don't think it's a coincidence that it's on my left foot, you know.
I don't think it's hyperbolic to say that that's holy crap sound, because that comes just days apart. That was Danny Ainge, president of the basketball ops of the Celtics, on with Tutcher and Rich with Adam Jones. That viper filling in for one of the guys.
The Dark Knight with a total setup.
Yeah, during those guys' vacation, talking to Danny Ainge, asking about Gordon Hayward's injury, this foot injury he's been dealing with. And Ainge just says, here's the quick summary between Ainge, the juxtaposition between Ainge and then Hayward just a couple of days later at practice. Again, just quick clip.
I don't think it has anything to do with it.
I think it has everything to do with the prior injury.
I mean, how can you not be on the same page with this? Again, just one more time, because that to me is just...
I don't think it has anything to do with it.
I think it has everything to do with the prior injury.
So, and I get it, any team in any professional sport is usually going to downplay the injury of the player, but this has been the concern here, and a legitimate concern, going back, you know, to 17, this horrific injury that derailed Hayward's first season with the Celtics. Now he's been dealing with maybe some of the hardware in that foot, and that's crept up here, and it feels like that's something to deal with. And obviously, fans, media, the first thing we go to it, so it's got to have something to do with that ankle injury. That
I don't think it has anything to do with it.
I think it has everything to do with the prior injury.
So the team is saying, you have the president of basketball ops, the man who made the deal for Hayward, saying, nah, it's got nothing to do with that injury. And then Hayward, days later at practice, saying, yeah, oh, of course it's got everything to do with the injury. Like, what? This doesn't feel like these two are on the same page.
I'll say this. I love Danny. Love Danny. He's smart. He's sarcastic. He's a lot like Vrabel in a lot of ways. But his history on injuries is kind of spotty. Like, oh, Shaquille O'Neal is definitely coming back healthy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, Jermaine O'Neal will be fine. Oh, we expect KG to come back for the play. Like, and I would say this. There's incentive from Danny's side. If Gordon is saying, oh, this definitely has to do with my horrific ankle injury suffered on the Kyrie thrown alley-oop in the first game I ever played for a Celtic, then that sends a message to teams like, oh, this is going to be an issue for Gordon Hayward moving forward. He's going to have these foot injuries. He'll never be back to 100%. If you're Ainge and you're trying to shop Hayward, or you want to make sure that all your assets have maximum value, you want to downplay that. You want to say, no, it has nothing to do with it. He's totally over the ankle. He's completely back to being 100%. The ankle injury, that foot, will not be an issue moving forward. Don't you?
Yeah, so I hadn't really, I guess I That's hadn't really thought about that.
That's
it just feels
the difference.
Like they're not on the same page, but you feel like this could be him potentially trying to shop Hayward. Look, Jimmy Stewart, executive producer of Felger and Maz, who is as plugged in on the Celtics as anyone that I know in this city. He has thrown that out there before. He's talked about how his wife, Gordon Hayward's wife, isn't really thrilled about living in Boston. There's places she'd rather live.
Giselle?
Yeah, Miami is a place that she'd rather be. Do you think that's what it could be? This is Ainge potentially trying to shop Gordon Hayward.
I think he just wants to, you know how Danny is, he wants to keep all his options open, and you never want to have an asset that declines in value. And Hayward's having a good year. I mean, yeah. He had a dunk last night where he went up and dunked it and kind of just did the quick dunk and put his arms out. And I was
excellent,
like,
wow. Against Charlotte, Toombs.
That looks like Gordon Hayward. Like, yeah. Before with his dunks, he was stretching like he could barely get there. He's looking good. You know, I know for a long time, we've talked on the show about whether Gordon Hayward is back or not. And I mean, he looks pretty close to back to me. And so the last thing you want if you're Danny Ainge with Hayward having that potential opt-in, which, you know, I think the Celtics are a little ambivalent about Hayward opting in. If that's what he decides to do at, you know, 30 plus million. So if you maybe want to create some more flexibility salary wise, and one way to do that would be to move him in a deal, you don't want his value depressed in any way, shape, or form.
I don't think it has anything to do with it.
I think it has everything to do with the prior injury.
By teams thinking that it has, as Hayward said, you know, all his foot injury moving forward is residual from the ankle.
Yeah.
So 2 years late, 3 years later.
Something to keep an eye on going forward. I found that sound just, again, there's...
Good poll, Jim.
I don't think that is hyperbolic to say that is holy crap sound. In a matter of a few days, president of basketball ops saying, nothing. And then the player himself saying, oh, yeah, no, it's got everything to do with the injury. One more time there.
I don't think it has anything to do with it.
I think it has everything to do with the prior injury.
That's ridiculous.
That's so great.
So another thing I want to touch on, because this popped up on Twitter last night following Kevin O'Connor, who, of course, does a great job for The Ringer. Probably
best.
Yeah, one of my
KOC,
favorite.
KOC, he's the man.
One of my favorite NBA writers. I saw him commenting on something that I was like, wait a minute, I had to reread it. I was like, did I just read what I thought that I read? So this guy at The Real Mike KB, Michael KB, who NBA writer for CBS Sports, his first tweet 13 hours ago, don't think it's time to panic for the Sixers. But if I'm Elton Brand, I'm absolutely seeing what I could potentially get in return for Al Horford leading up to the trade deadline. Kevin retweets this and says, agreed. Sixers shouldn't panic at all, but should explore trades with Horford. It's a rough fit for him in Philly. Horford helps as a backup to Embiid, but the fit with Embiid is poor. There may not be a deal out there, but it's worth probing the market. So, feels like there could be some regret on the behalf of Al Horford. It feels like, and it's not like I'm watching the Sixers all the time, but the bit that I have seen, and especially when they played the Celtics, it feels like there should be a little bit more high-low between him and Embiid, but for more often than not, it just feels like Al Horford's out there, and they're not utilizing his passing.
Yeah, and Al had some comments this week about the offense and how it's kind of tough for him, you know, which for Al, I mean, were really outspoken comments. I think that they've sort of diminished him. It's a lot like to me when Kevin Love had to join LeBron and Kyrie in Cleveland. Kevin Love in Minnesota was a great player. You could run the offense through him. He'd post up, great passer. And then all of a sudden he gets to Cleveland. They're like,
felt lost.
Stand in the corner and wait for the ball and shoot these threes. They're kind of doing the same to Al. I mean, Brad was running the offense through Al Horford here as a distributor, as a facilitator. They loved him sort of at that high post. That's not happening here. And I would also say that Brett Brown is not.
I just feel like that's a bad fit.
He's not as creative offensively as I don't feel like the Sixers' offense is as nuanced and creative as Brad's.
Let's go to try to squeeze in a couple of calls before we get a wrap up here. We'll go to Matt in Malden. You're next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show. Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. I was at the game last night, and the one point I wanted to make was something that they haven't always done well all season that they seem to do really well last night, especially in the first quarter, even while the scoring gap was happening, was they were drawing a lot of fouls early in the game that I think paid dividends in, you know, messing with the other team's rotations, getting them to give them a little more space because a couple of the players were getting a lot of fouls early. And if we can keep that up, especially with Jaylen Brown going inside, I think that'll pay dividends down the season.
It does feel like there's more toughness for this team. You know,
I think there's more mental toughness. There's more resolve.
Yeah. And quickly with Kevin and Stoneham, you'll be the last call here this afternoon on the Sports Up Celtics Show.
Hey, what's up, guys? Two quick points. First, did you guys hear a little Patrick Mahomes, Kermit the Frog with a smart clip there? I don't know. I just heard that. And
it does have
second,
Kevin.
I just wanted to say how happy I am with Kemba and Kemba's play. Like, pleasantly surprised is too strong, but and I knew he was going to be easier to root for than Kyrie because Kyrie's the biggest D-bag going, but he's just been way more efficient than I thought he was going to be. And I don't know, just his play and I think it's an underplayed story in town.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, no, he's been a breath of fresh air coming off what we had to deal with last year with one of the biggest PUDs in all of professional sports in Kyrie Irving. Still not back yet, by the way, correct?
No, still not back.
Still not back yet.
Still
from
not back yet.
The shoulder impingement, and now there's speculation, right, in recent weeks that there still could be something
Vincent
going
Vincent Goodwill
on
had speculation that, yeah.
You know, some maybe some mental issues going on with Kyrie either. Who knows? Who knows? But, boy, I feel like that was a bad fit for the Brooklyn Nets so far. All right, that's going to do it for Chris Gasper and I here on the Sports Hub Celtics show. Thanks to Tucker Silver for producing the show. Tim McCone, who's joining us as well, taking you into the Duncan Bruins pregame show. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, now good to have you. Taking you into the Bruins, hosting the Edmonton Oilers at TD Garden. Puck drop a little after 1 o'clock. Enjoy your afternoon. Go Pats tonight. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.